This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.
Good Saturday morning. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. I am live. I am in studio. I was going to be headed over to Pullman, but my wife had some medical issues this week. I was in the hospital most of the week, so I stayed home, and I'm here live talking to you today. And after spending a couple minutes with Mike Kent on Radio Real Estate, let's talk about, though, the market's weekly recap this week. Several factors, including the economic data, the pandemic, anticipated monetary policy changes, and ongoing congressional negotiations continue to weigh on the markets. Value stocks, again, those are your dividend stocks, marginally outperformed as the Russell 2000 index was up 0.42%, but it was the only major index to advance this week, while the Dow Jones Industrial Average declined 0.7%, followed by the NASDAQ down 0.47%, the S&P 500 index down 0.57%. Economic data were mixed as retail sales rose 0.7%, well above estimates of a 0.9% decline. The September New York Manufacturing Index at 34.3 far exceeded both estimates at 18 and August's 18.3 reading. Consumer confidence remains muted as pandemic concerns and inflation weigh on sentiment. And on Friday, the Advisory Committee to the Food and Drug Administration voted unanimously to recommend that the FDA authorize a Pfizer-BioNTech booster shot 6 months after vaccination for people 65 and older or those that are at risk of severe illness. The committee provided the Biden administration some, but not all, the White House wanted regarding booster shots for the general population. Next week, the FDA and the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices will make its recommendation. Meanwhile, coronavirus cases rose 6.1%, deaths rose 17.4% week over week. Hospitals in several states, Alaska, Idaho, and Montana, have activated crisis standards, which may require rationing care. The debate on when the Federal Reserve will begin tapering seems now to favor a November announcement. The speculation may change if Congress fails to raise the debt ceiling beforehand. The deadline for funding government operations is now coming to the forefront, along with infrastructure legislation. Democrats continue to debate both the scale, substance, and funding for the social infrastructure plan. The protracted negotiations may threaten the House of Representatives' vote scheduled for September 27th on the Senate-approved infrastructure plan. Progressives have previously insisted that they not vote for the infrastructure legislation until the social infrastructure bill is passed. Many analysts are lowering expectations for third-quarter corporate earnings in light of the pandemic, supply chain delays, and widespread staffing shortages. General Motors announced plans this week to idle North American factories due to the ongoing chip shortage. The shutdown will impact new and used car sales. The recent hurricanes, which have destroyed many autos in the Southwest and Northeast, are exacerbating the shortage. The equity markets have been treading water. Bloomberg reports that the S&P 500 index has gone 34 days without a 1% increase, its longest streak in 20 months. Since May, over half of the companies in the index have declined at least 10%. For now, markets will likely continue to fluctuate based on most recent headline events. And I'm going to update my COVID tracker information that I follow every week. I pick a number of items out of here to kind of make you aware. One is there's a nationwide study of patients of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs from mid-January through the end of June of this year found that of the total number of COVID-19 hospitalizations. 48% had mild or asymptomatic disease. This was significant implications for the nationwide COVID-19 data dashboards, and it supports that nearly half of the overall COVID-19 hospitalization numbers represent patients who may have been admitted for another reason entirely or had only a mild form of the disease. A couple other interesting statistics that I found this week, and this talking about epidemics, and this is as of September 15th. And we're looking at two different measurements here. One is the case fatality rate, and the other one is the average number of people infected by each sick person. And these charts are kind of interesting because if you have the seasonal flu, the average person infects about 1.5 persons. Same thing with swine flu, about 1.5 persons, and virtually no deaths on that. COVID-19, the average person infects about 3 people, and again, less than a 1.5% death rate. Going on across, if you have measles, you're going to infect the average of about 15 people, so a relatively high number. And then as I move up the line, I look at SARS. In the case of SARS, the average person that had SARS infected about 3 people, and there was also about a 10% fatality rate. And we go on up the line, we look at MERS, and in MERS, the average person that had MERS infected less than one other person, but there was about a 35% fatality rate. And then Ebola, in that case, there was about 1.5, and then maybe a little more close to 2%. There are 2 people for every one that was infected, but of those that got infected, almost 40% of them died. And then the bird flu, for each person that got infected, you infected about one more. But in that case, over about 50% of them died. So kind of some interesting spreads there as far as what's happening and where. Numbers also on the catastrophic outcomes of various events. The odds of your dying of heart disease are about 1 in 6. Cancer, 1 in 7. Chronic lower respiratory disease, about 1 in 27. Dying of suicide, about 1 in 88. Dying of opiate overdoses, about 1 in 92. Dying from a fall, 1 in 06. Motor vehicle, 1 out of 107. Dying from gun assault, about 1 person out at 289, or 1 death. Dying of a pedestrian incident, 1 in about 543. Going on down, for example, dying via sunstroke, 1 in 8,248. Dying of accidental gun discharge, about 1,841. Dying of electrocution, radiation, or temperature, about 1 in 13,394. Dying of sharp objects, 1 in a little over 29,000. Hospitalization due to COVID-19 fully vaccinated, 1 in 31,030. Dying from a catalytic storm, about 1 in 59,000. Dying from a dog attack, 1 in 86,000. Dying from COVID-19 fully vaccinated, 1 out of 137,000. Dying of a lightning strike, about 1 out of 139,000. Just kind of interesting when you sit down and take a look at those numbers and all the fear that's running around out there. And then one other thing is deaths by vaccine status, over 80 being the large number people. And, of course, that's where you find the greatest number of deaths. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
Wow, what a year it has been. So many things are happening in the world. I would describe it as unprecedented and unpredictable.
You are right. There have been heat waves, forest fires, hurricanes, floods, and not to mention this virus. What's next?
I don't know, but didn't they just find a nest of giant Asian murder hornets?
All I can say is I'm ready for things to get back to normal and predictable.
Well, I can think of one thing that is always predictable. Fall is coming, and Linden Sheet Metal will be out to service our heating equipment. Their technicians are always helpful and provide reliable service.
That reminds me, our furnace needs replacing. I'd better hurry up and give them a call.
At Linden Sheet Metal, we know how everyone wants life back to normal. Until then, now is a great time to think about servicing or upgrading your furnace so you have reliable heat when the weather becomes more unpredictable. With rebates and financing with low monthly payments, we have systems to fit most budgets. Linden Sheet Metal, serving the Northwest for over 80 years.
Cascade Radio Group proudly presents Dedicated to Duty, a campaign focused on the positive work and priorities of local law enforcement. As first responders, their duties demand dedication, and their stories deserve to be told. Dedicated to Duty. Find their stories on air and on this station's website. Brought to you by LTI, Inc., LTI, a Northwest leader in bulk transportation, and by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. There's something for everyone at Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Exit 210 off I-5 in Arlington.
KGMI Connects is a new live show each weekday afternoon about our community and you.
I'm almost thinking the parliamentary form of democracy is better than ours. We always end up electing like a Democratic president and a Republican House and Senate, or the other way around, and the result is nothing ever gets done.
Join us each weekday at 4 p.m. for KGMI Connects on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. We're Asset Advisors. We're located out on the Pacific Highway. That's out about halfway to Ferndale, north of the Slater Road, on the right-hand side in the Pacific Commerce Center, next to Wilson's Furniture, Northwest Hot Tubs, Dakota Creek Guns, G.K. Knutson, all those other little businesses in there with us. And our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. Give us a call. Check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Well, I ran into a little time there, so I'm going to go ahead and finish my COVID tracker information this week. We saw initial jobless claims actually increase about 6.4% in the last week, but continuing claims dropped about 6.6%. So fewer people short-term. Probably because they're not taking the shot and getting laid off. Might be. And then looking at box office receipts, they were up the week of September 9th, almost 100%. So maybe Clint Eastwood had a lot of people going to the movies. I don't know. I know he had a new movie out there. So probably Clint Eastwood. Anyway, almost 100%. Rail car traffic was down almost 11% as of September 10th week. Steel production was up about 0.9%. Hotel occupancy up about 0.5%. Restaurants had a pretty big drop. Now, this is as of September 14th, almost 16% in operating capacity. TSA checkpoints were down almost 9.1% at 1,601,297 passengers a day. Motor gasoline supply was down about 7.5%. And global commercial flights as of September 15th, an average of 93,933 a day. That was a 1.5% increase over a week ago. And I do these updates on a fairly regular basis because I think it's important for us to talk about what's happening in different segments of the market. I know you've heard me talking about growth versus value. Growth is a heavily weighted technology stocks, as an example. Your value side is your dividend-paying stocks, the largest sector there are financials. Some interesting statistics, I think, maybe to kind of just keep you in tune as to what's happening. We are seeing some rotation in the market. Recent results clearly show that the value stocks are outperforming the growth stocks, but the gap has narrowed a little bit recently when we think that's when we look at year-to-date numbers. The S&P Pure Growth Index has outperformed counterpart basically in four of the six periods we're going to talk about. So total returns as of September 14th for pure growth versus value. For 15 years, pure growth averaged 13.62%, value averaged 8.74%. So value growth did really well. 10 years, almost 17.6% versus 13.5%. Actually, there's nothing wrong with either one of those when you look at the 10-year number. 5-year number, over 20% a year on the growth side, only about 11% on the value side. Again, certainly nothing wrong with 11% returns. Now, in the last 3 years, 19.6% on the growth side, 5.69% on the value side. 1 year, we're seeing that growth underperformed value, 43.29 to 5.81 or 50.81%. Year to date, almost equal, 23.41 versus 24.24. So, relatively equal numbers there. Then, as of August 31st, the largest sector weighting, as I mentioned a minute ago, in growth was information technology, which is a little over 40%. The largest sector in the pure value index was financials at 45%. From December 31st of last year through September 14th of this year, the S&P technology sector posted a total return of about 20.5%, compared to about 29% for financials during that same period of time. And the S&P index itself was up about 19.5%. The last 12 months, we've seen a tale of two styles. Value stocks, or your dividend again, thrived when the yield on the 10-year benchmark rose, and vice versa. So from August 20th or August 6th of this year through March 31st, the yield on the 10-year T-note increased 120 basis points. That would be 1.2% from 0.54% to 1.74%. And that's according to Bloomberg. Well, over that period, the S&P 500 Pure Value Index posted a total return of over 51% compared to 17.8% for the pure growth stocks. And from March 31st of this year through September 14th, the yield on the 10-year T-note decreased by 45 basis points. That means the yield dropped almost 0.5% from 1.74% to 1.29%, according to Bloomberg. And over that period, the S&P 500 Pure Value Index posted a total return of 2.66% compared to 2.39% for the growth index. So what we're seeing here is as interest rates went up, the dividend stocks started to outperform the growth stocks. And then as interest rates softened up a little again because of, you know, COVID maybe picking up and, you know, whatever, we saw that interest rates started to soften up a little bit. As interest rates softened up, well, then we saw the growth stocks kind of pick up again. So, you know, our advice right now to our and what we're doing with our portfolios is we are really diversifying that money. We're not trying to focus on one area or the other. You know, when I give that 15-year number, for example, for the S&P numbers, for example, and we see that growth was 17.69 versus value of 13.49, well, 15 years goes back to about 2006. If you add in the first 5 or 6 years of the 2000s, you're going to find that value, for example, for that first 10 years outperformed growth. So the markets are always going to be cyclical, and that's why I think when you sit down and you build a portfolio, buy and hold may or may not be your best strategy. I think it's important to apply some active monitoring to your portfolios and be willing to move money around and change positions. We also are seeing some movements not only in the large cap area where it's gone growth to value, but also seeing some movement in the small cap areas, which have underperformed. We also have reasons to believe that your non-U.S. positions, including emerging markets, might be a very attractive place to be putting some money at this time. So I guess the bottom line is sit down with somebody that understands what they're doing, understands past history of the markets. I guess I'd like to say that we're included in that with this last week, as I mentioned with Mike, we were talking earlier, I just finished my 55th year in the industry, so I've been at it for a long time, been through a lot of things, went through the 67, 68 down market, the 72, 73 down market, saw that 87 bust for a couple of days there, early 90s we had a drop, then of course the 2000, 2001, 2000 drop was really significant. 07-08. Well, I'm talking about 07-08. Also, one other thing to bring up. We use a lot, some strategies that have been around for a while. One of them we use has been around since the early 2000s, Kind of interesting when you talk growth versus value, because in a declining market, typically value does outperform. And the one strategy we use a lot of in 2008, when the market was down about 37%, was only down about 16%, and it was a dividend strategy. Now, a year ago, when we had the COVID shock, the value stocks took a big hit because we weren't sure. The financials were pretty vulnerable at that time. And frankly, the petroleum industry, the oil industry, probably led those markets down and took the biggest drop during that period of time. And so there are six cycles, but generally we've seen value outperform growth during periods of volatility and periods of down market. And of course, now as we move ahead, expecting the Fed to start raising interest rates, maybe not raising interest rates in November, but giving us an announcement that they're going to start tapering, which means they're going to quit buying as many government bonds as they are. They're basically the finance arm of the federal government right now. Of course, with all that money they want to pass and all those spending bills, going to look out for those type of things too. When I come back, I'm going to talk about those spending bills and some things that we're going to see, some specific tax proposals and those type of things. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, neighbor, what are you watering? Think that sidewalk's gonna grow grass?
Oh, my sprinkler seems to have a mind of its own. I might need one of those magic wand things.
You mean a watering wand? That'd help, along with a soaker hose. And you know that'd save water and save you money on your water bill, too. Water where it matters. Water where it matters. Water where it matters.
Did you know that Whatcom County is currently in a drought? So it's more important than ever to conserve water with these smart watering tips. Follow the voluntary watering schedule based on even or odd street address numbers through September 30th. Water early or late in the day to reduce evaporation. Water slowly to get water to the roots and less often. Let your lawn get a tan and go dormant. It's a great way to reduce your water bill, save water, and it'll quickly green up in the fall. Brought to you by the Whatcom Water Alliance, working together to improve water conservation in Whatcom County. For more info, visit WhatcomWaterAlliance.org.
The real issues affecting our important local farming community and the food we feed our families. The Farming Show on KGMI.
Powered by Ultrac. Learn how to remotely control pumps, valves, and other irrigation equipment from your phone. Automate collection of instantaneous and annual surface water diversion from your flow meter. Visit ALTRAC.com.
Join me, Dylan Honkoop, for The Farming Show every Saturday at 7 a.m. on KGMI.
Make your home improvement dreams a reality with West Edge Credit Union's Eco Fix It Loan by West Edge Credit Union. A new deck, install solar energy, or convert from gas to electric. The Eco Fix It Loan with no fees and a special low fixed rate make them possible. Secure financing now and use it when you're ready. Pay no interest until you draw funds. And with no equity requirement, means you can get funding in as little as 24 hours. Find solutions, not excuses, at West Edge Credit Union on James and Alabama in Bellingham. Some conditions apply. See West Edge for details. West Edge Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA. Online at westedgecu.org.
Vision loss is not something that you feel until it happens.
Most people lose their vision from diseases like macular degeneration and glaucoma, not at birth.
3 million Americans have glaucoma, and half don't even know it.
11 million people in the United States have macular degeneration.
So many eye disorders can be treated if caught early.
Make a plan today to get your eyes checked.
Visit brightfocus.org to learn more.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
When it comes to your comfort and the air quality in your home, rely on the trained comfort specialists at West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric. 100% satisfaction guarantee. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
CBS News Brief. A midday rally at the U.S. Capitol building in support of those jailed after January's deadly insurrection. Extremism expert Michael German says calling them political prisoners is harmful to American democracy.
Mainstream politicians continuing to say supportive things to them conditions them to believe that they're actions are not just justified, but authorized.
An FDA advisory panel is not authorizing the Pfizer COVID booster shot for those under 65.
The question that was reviewed by the panel was, in people 16 years of older, would they think there's enough data to merit a booster shot? And the answer was voted 16-2 no, that there wasn't enough data.
CBS medical contributor Dr. David Agus. Thousands of Haitian migrants have gathered in a Texas border town.
Officials say they expect thousands more to cross the river between Mexico and Del Rio in the coming days.
CBS News Brief, I'm Linda Kenyon.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. Hope you're having a good one. Survived the storm last night. That was a nasty time out there for a while, but oh boy, did we need that rain. Really needed it bad. You know, we're seeing the $3.5 trillion spending bill that's attempting to go through the House of Representatives and eventually it'll go to the Senate. But we're even perceiving even some Democrats that are somewhat alarmed about the size of it and where they're going. And, of course, they, you know, we've already spent trillions of dollars on COVID-19 relief legislation in the past few months. But now we've got this bill that they're trying to push through, which will be the largest tax and spend bill in U.S. history. And the House and Senate moved legislation through basically at freight train speed. There are some details about the plan that have emerged. Americans should be concerned about the plans for amnesty for illegal immigrants, job-killing tax hikes, spending surge that threatens to cause both runaway inflation and dangerous highly high debt. The situation is dire. We're seeing even some Democrats, Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, announced that she's uncomfortable with the size and scope of the package. She's has a right. The $3.5 trillion bill would cost every household in the country $27,000. $27,000. September 2nd, Senator Manchin from West Virginia wrote a commentary piece in the Wall Street Journal to voice his own reservations. He also cited the amount of spending, especially in light of the massive COVID-19 spending we've already seen. And we have to remember this new spending would be actually totaled more than $5 trillion that passed in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, and more than $1 trillion for infrastructure is likely to pass later. Congress and the administration stand to spend more than $9 trillion basically in less than 12 months. $9 trillion. That means that most of this money is being borrowed. A good share of it's being borrowed. It's going to push the national debt up over $35 trillion. And putting that cash in the economy in a short period, it's going to have some consequences. One, it's probably going to cause a surge in inflation. And it also is going to basically be a mega million package could threaten to send inflation basically out of control. Manchin, of course, is also concerned that the expression of the new spending bill will add between $1 trillion and $2 trillion to the national debt. It probably will be higher than that. Right now, the national debt is more than $220,000 a household. So when we're sitting here talking about increasing $27,000, that means that each household's debt, just because of this one bill, will be increasing almost 15%. There are some other Democratic moderates, Representative Stephanie Murphy of Florida, Henry Cuellar of Texas, have echoed concerns. Avoiding debt increase would make the current package dramatically more difficult to pass. That's because there's no realistic way to recover that $3.5 trillion in spending while limiting the taxes to high-income households. They're just not going to be able to get enough money. The progressives are often look at Europe's higher level of social spending as something for America to emulate, but neglect the fact that the additional spending is only possible with higher taxes on the middle class. The $3.5 trillion deficit could be deficit neutral or to avoid direct taxes on the middle class, but it can't do both. Another problem is that the neck-break speed at which they're trying to push this through. The request that the House members will have 72 hours to review the legislation. The bill already is estimated at over 10,000 pages. It means you got 72 hours to read about 40 pages per hour with no breaks for sleeping. It appears that this is similar to Pelosi's Obamacare passage when she said to pass the bill so you can find out what's in it. And, of course, reckless speed and misinformation is not always good. The House committees have only a few weeks to compose, and and deliberate their sections of the bill. At the hearing of the House and Ways Committee, the concerns were raised about the budget. The Congressional Budget Office doesn't have time to estimate the costs. Members of Congress have no idea how much the legislation will really cost. So far, requests to prevent deficit increases and avoid rushing to meet arbitrary deadlines have gone nowhere. As a result, the House is on a pace to finish drafting the piece of the package and vote for it by the end of the month. It remains to see whether moderate Democrats in the House or Senate will stick to their guns and oppose that spending. But one thing is clear. The bill, in our opinion, is bad news, and it's not going to be good for the economy in the long run. So let's talk about what's in that bill. They're proposing to spend an enormous amount of taxpayer money on what the New York Times calls cradle-to-grave additions to social welfare. When budgeting shenanigans are ignored, the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget estimates that the full cost is not $3.5 trillion, but at least $5 trillion, and possibly as much as $5.5 trillion. They have a lengthy notice, for example, the health care components. The proposal will spend more money on existing programs that are already deeply flawed. So instead of throwing good money at bad, basically, if you sit down and look at maybe reforming some of those existing programs, you might find that there's some unmet needs, but at this point, that's not happening. So one of those benefits is new home care benefit. Under the current system, as many as one-third of hospital discharge patients who are entitled to home care never receive the benefit. Those who do participate in a system in which fraud and theft are commonplace. Rather than reform the system, the new program will spend even more money on it while ignoring cheaper alternatives. The monthly cost of the new health care would be more than monthly cost of a nursing home in 6 states. It'll be more costly than assisted living in 45 states. It'll be more cost than the home health aid in 49 states. Minnesota's the one exception. The proposal completely ignores a highly effective alternative called cash and counseling. Under that program, the money goes to the patient, not to the caregivers. Patients can hire and fire their service providers. The type of person who can provider also has been expanded. Some states even allow spouses to be caregivers. Early surveys found the satisfaction of cash and counseling hovers in the 90% percentiles, a satisfaction rate probably unequaled in any other healthcare system in the world today. Then there's dental, hearing, and vision care. Under Medicare, under one proposal, the benefit would cost $1,500 per year per beneficiary. However, seniors who enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan already save about $1,500 in reduced premiums, and most Medicare Advantage plans offer some coverage for three areas of care. Look at those Joe Namath commercials. But some 40% of seniors are already Medicare Advantage. The number continues to grow. Then Medicaid expansion. This provision would focus on states that haven't expanded Medicaid to adults who are under 138% of the federal poverty level. The proposal would likely create a Medicaid-like program to enroll target population and would pay Medicaid rates to providers. Yet none of the problems with the current system would be corrected. 1 in 10 Medicaid dollars is lost to fraud. An estimated 1 in 4 dollars are spent on people who are not eligible for the benefit. That's as we stand today. Nearly one-third of doctors who won't take Medicaid patients, enrollment is highly unstable. In 2015, average adults stayed enrolled in Medicaid for only 9.5 months. The average child stayed enrolled for only 10 months. Chronic payments in particular need a continued relationship with providers. That usually means having a continued relationship with a health plan. The most rigorous experiment ever conducted in Oregon found that Medicaid, as opposed to being insured, has no impact on the physical health of enrollees, and enrollees themselves value the coverage as little as 20 cents on the dollar. For that reason, we should give low-income families cash and let them pay for their health care. 80% of care provided and insured is already free. Cash has positive effects on health and life expectancy. Obamacare expansion. We're seeing a 2-year provision enacted in March means that more low-income buyers are paying little to nothing for insurance. Maximum contribution has been reduced from 10% of income to 8.5%, even for people who are above 400% of the poverty line. The new proposal would make those changes permanent. The change, however, would not lower the outrageously high deductibles in Obamacare plans or expand the narrow provider networks that deny many patients access to the best doctors and the best medical centers. Most of the new money is going to people who appear not to need it. For example, a 60-year-old couple with two kids making $212,000 is averagely receiving a benefit of $11,209. In contrast, a family of four making $39,750, regardless of age of the couple, is receiving a benefit of $1,646. Just FYI. Okay, we're also seeing in these proposals that, among other things, the tax reform proposals, they want to take away what we call the backdoor Roth. Wednesday of this last week, the House Ways and Means Committee approved on a party line vote, 24-19, legislation that comprises this portion of the $3.5 billion bill that creates priorities for the social and climate change programs. The panel's massive features had an array of provisions, including paid family medical leave, mandatory IRA auto program for where the employee now is going to have to put away between 6 and 10% of their payroll. This isn't the employer. The employer will have to set it up. Employees are going to be forced to put money into these plans. After 40 hours of debate, 4 days, the committee's Democratic majority advanced the legislation. The proposed tax increase is the first that have been put in legislation language. Among its many provisions, Ways and Means proposed they would increase the top individual rate to 39.6%, top capital gains rate to 25%, while imposing a 3% surcharge on those that have income in excess of $5 million. Also would curb large retirement savings programs for high-income earners. One of the reforms targets a strategy for making contributions to a Roth individual IRAs, called a backdoor Roth, where people can put money into a non-deductible IRA and do the conversion. That option would be going away. Roth conversions would be prohibited for individuals with taxable income more than $400,000, married couples with taxable income more than $450,000 as of December 31st of 2031. Keep that in mind. That's 10 years out. So we have a clock running. We have a decision to make. Another Roth conversion change would happen sooner. Basically, as I mentioned, takes away the backdoor Roth as of the end of this year. So it really limits what you can do with your after-tax money. It's a long way from becoming law. We're still waiting for the Senate to have to include those same provisions. The Political Balancing Act could come tumbling down. Some moderate Democrats are very concerned about it. Uncertainty will continue in the weeks ahead. House and Ways Committee was a little bit less expansive than anticipated, but still making some real big changes. Dick Donahue with you with the Wealth Wake Up Live. We'll be back shortly.
Going on around the world and in our hometowns. And that someone is us. We are Free Radio. We are always there. We are broadcasters. Visit wearebroadcasters.com or text radio to 52886 to learn more. Furnished by NAB and this station.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Again, as always, if you got questions for us, give us a call, 360-733-1200. And talking about calling, I still have some Mariners tickets for that last home stand of the year against the LA Angels and the Oakland A's. I think the Oakland A's come in first. There's only six games there. I know the Saturday game is already gone. Friday night's game, though, is a fan appreciation night. They have some drawings that they run during the game. They're drawn by seat number. They're giving away widescreen TVs and season tickets and all kinds of stuff. So somebody wants that Friday night game. There'll be fireworks afterwards. So I still have that one available. And then I have the Sunday game, the last game of the year on October 3rd. So just putting a plug in there. You can always call me, 360-733-1200. Okay, so I've been talking about the tax bill and basically how they plan now. We're going to talk a little bit about the tax hikes that they're talking about. There's nearly $3 trillion in tax hikes over the next decade in an attempt to pay for their bill. The hikes are predominantly focused on wealthy Americans, large corporations. Among the increases, top tax bracket go to 39.6 from 37. They would raise about $170 billion in revenue over the next decade. Now think about that. That's a 2.6% increase on the top high earners is only going to bring in $170 billion over the next decade of the $3 trillion. So you're looking at not very much money there. Now, Democrats also want to raise approximately $1.9 trillion from corporations and wealthy Americans, which the White House had described as individuals earning at least $400,000. The plan draws a similar line that includes households earning $425,000, married couples earning $450,000. Got to make a comment here. Sounds good, especially to people lower income think, gee whiz, rich are going to pay their share. They're already paying a big share of the taxes. But don't forget, those are the people that are going out there and creating jobs. Those are the people that are going out there and buying equipment that create manufacturing jobs. Those are the people that hire people, like I said. Those are the people that hire extra people. Sometimes if they don't have the money because they're paying more taxes, they're going to not hire as many people. Or more than likely what they're going to do, if you're an oil company and you're going to pay higher taxes, you're going to pass it through in the price of the gas at the gas pump. If you're a bakery company, you're going to pass it through in the price of your bread. If you're the meat company, you're going to pass it through in the price of your meat. So basically, those things are all built into the price of stuff when you go buy things. So while it sounds politically good to say that we're going to tax the rich, you need to be aware that it's a little guy that's going to pay this. So some of these increases we're looking at, the top capital gains rate will jump by 5 percentage points to 25%. It'll raising about $123 billion, again, of $1.9 trillion, less than 10%. Changes to qualified investment earnings could effectively increase the rate from 28.3, which could raise up to $252 billion. Changes in the estate tax exemption would raise about $50 billion in revenue. An additional 3% tax on Americans earning more than $5 million is going to raise about $127 billion as well, according to the plan. The overall total increase adds up to about $2.9 trillion, leaving about a $600 billion gap in new revenue over the 10-year time. But the plan assumes that new changes will spark economic growth and increase revenues even further, in theory canceling out the shortage. It also bumps the corporate tax rate from 21% to 26.5%, which has led some internal disagreement between moderate Democrats and progressives. Again, Senator Manchin from West Virginia has already objected to the bill's overall size a number of times. He said this last week that he supports a corporate tax rate of 25, while progressives insisted in being higher, which already calling the $3.5 trillion number a compromise. So that's enough on the tax bill right now and the spending bill, but I'll continue to look for stuff that I think keeps you informed as to what's going on, because it's your pocketbook that's going to be paying for it one way or the other. Okay, while we're talking about pocketbooks, a couple of weeks from now, 3 weeks, I guess, October 15th, if you're 65 or older, you may have a lot of questions. This is when the annual Medicare open enrollment season begins. Runs from October 15th to December 7th, and that's every year. Those are fixed dates. Why should you care? Well, health insurance specialists who can help those nearing age 65th birthday sort through, there's a maze of initial Medicare choices, assure that those who are still working that they can delay Medicare enrollment penalty-free if they have health insurance coverage through their current employer. So it's important to know exactly what your status is and work with somebody that does that. We've got a guy upstairs in our office, not affiliated with us. I'd be glad to refer you to if you want to call me. Medicare 7-month initial enrollment period begins 3 months before, so this is when you're at 65. It offers two options. You either enroll in original Medicare in an all-inclusive or an all-inclusive Medicare Advantage plan. Older Americans with job-based health insurance have 8 months after they retire, or their insurance ends into enrolling in Medicare during a special enrollment period. Those who have made their initial Medicare decision may still be confounded by the bombardment of radio, TV, and internet ads trumpeting Medicare open enrollment each fall. If they like their current coverage, they don't have to change. But if they take time to review their options, they could save some money, particularly on prescription drugs. So it's probably important to just sit down and review your prescription drugs every year. The original Medicare includes Part A. It's premium-free. It's your hospital insurance. Part B covers your doctor's fees and outpatient services for a monthly fee. Coverage can be used anywhere in the country and that accepts Medicare. Most people supplement original Medicare with a Medigap insurance policy to cover deductibles, copayments, and certain out-of-pocket costs. Many also purchase a Medicare Prescription D prescription drug plan for an additional monthly premium unless they have retiree drug coverage through their former employer or union. Alternatively, an increasing number of Medicare beneficiaries are opting for all-inclusive Medicare Advantage plans. Now, I have to tell you, personally, I debate this one. I think that Med Advantage plans sound good, except that you then have copays when you go to the doctors. You have some potentially copays when you go to the hospital. I prefer the straight Medicare supplement. In this case, I prefer Plan G personally, simply because we pay a monthly premium right now, about $210 a month, my wife and I. The good part about it, other than a deductible early in the year, about $190 thereabouts, we don't see any more bills come through. And I think once you're in retired and you're on a fixed income, knowing exactly where you're at is really good to know. So those enrolled in Medicare plan, Med Advantage plan, or Plan D should receive an annual notice of change from their current plan provider by the end of this month. They should review it carefully, noting changes in costs. Their coverage still meets their needs next year. If you do, you don't have to take any action. But if you're thinking about switching plans, you should focus on what matters most, whether it's access to your preferred doctors, lower monthly premiums, or inclusion of specific benefits or services. You should compare costs for insurance premiums, deductibles, and cost-sharing amounts. Now, access to preferred doctors is an important one because a lot of the Med Advantage plans actually restrict which set of doctors or where you can go. So, again, you need to be aware of that. You should also pay special attention to any changes in prescription drug costs. Coverage rules that list the drugs the plan covers, known as formulary, which can change from year to year. Research shows that people with Medicare prescription drug coverage could lower their costs by shopping around plans every year. I think my wife and I change plans almost every year. There could be another Part D plan in the area that covers the same drugs but takes it at a lower price. Again, we sit down with the guy upstairs, and not the guy way upstairs, just the guy up one floor from me in the office. Anyway, we sit down with Bill every year and review our plan, and we look at the different plans that are available and make our changes. Medicare beneficiaries can compare drug coverage options through. There is a Med Advantage plan, Medicare Plan Finder tool at Medicare.gov. The Plan Finder tool compares plans based on the drugs you take, the pharmacy they use, and the drug cost. So you can do it yourself. I kind of think it's good to sit down with somebody that does it all the time, frankly. That would be my advice, is to go sit down with somebody that doesn't on a regular basis. Okay, changing topics here. We're seeing a lot of local cities, Washington cities, also Yakima County now, has voted to prohibit a local state income tax. A little background, we're seeing cities that are enacting a ban on local income tax. Yakima was the first city to do it. The city, they actually have a proposition that will be voted on here in November. Other cities that have already acted to prevent local income tax, Battleground, Washington, Granger, Kennewick, Moses Lake, Spokane Valley, and Union Gap have adopted resolutions opposed. There was a prior prohibition to state income tax, but the city of Seattle attempted to enact one anyway. Basically, it was appealed. King County Superior Court, the judge invalidated it, went to the Court of Appeals. Basically, they made a surprising decision. The court unanimously ruled that Seattle's graduating income tax was unconstitutional based on numerous rulings previously issued by the state Supreme Court. However, they invalidated statutory prohibitions on local governments from imposing a flat tax, which the state Supreme Court then decided not to hear the case. Earlier this year, legislation adopted an unconstitutional capital gains income tax. That's the state legislature that is currently also being appealed. I think it's a court over in Chelan County that's hearing that. For years, the Washington Department of Commerce has made the state's no-income tax policy a major selling point to choose Washington jobs promotion, according to the Department of Commerce officials. They offer businesses some competitive advantage found in a few other states that includes no personal or corporate income tax. Former Washington State Treasurer Dwayne Davidson also agrees that having no income tax is an important advantage to people in state. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here in KGMI. Gotta go. Hear the music coming. Don't forget our show tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Questions for us, give us a call, 360-733-1200. Thanks, and have a great week. And keep your umbrella less happy. Handy. See you then.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Kobenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Kobenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.